Today's episode is a conversation with Federico Fabbrini, who is the director of the DCU Brexit Institute. He talks about how Ireland's situation in the European Union has changed as a result of Brexit. Finally, he shares his thoughts about the future of Ireland in the EU. Hello and welcome. This is the Decades podcast series from the Brexit Institute at Dublin City University. And today my guest is Federico Fabbrini, who is, of course, the director of the Brexit Institute. Welcome, Federico.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Ian.
So, as you know, this podcast series is about the 50-year history of Ireland in the European Union. But since you are especially an expert on Brexit, we want to talk about the more recent couple of decades in that history. So let's start with thinking back before Brexit happened and before Brexit was even a word. You had Ireland. Ireland went through a bit of a rough patch in its history with the European Union. Do you want to talk about that? And this is before Brexit, when Ireland was in, so during a couple of referendums that went wrong and the financial crisis.
Yes, the last two decades of Ireland's membership in the European Union are remarkable in many ways, because I think Ireland quickly moved from being a laggard in European integration into becoming a member state that really sits at the core of the EU project. And the only explanation for this quick transformation has to do with Brexit. As you mentioned, Ian, we should remember that at the start of the new millennium, Ireland twice voted against EU treaty reforms. In 2001, the Irish electorate voted down the Treaty of Nice. And in 2007, again, the Irish electorate voted down the Treaty of Lisbon. In both circumstances, the European Council was forced to come up with forms of reassurances that ultimately allowed for a second referendum, this time both for Nice and for the Lisbon Treaty, that was positive. But certainly, Ireland had a reputation at the beginning of the 21st century for being a member state that embraced a mostly Eurosceptic position, in many ways similar to that of the United Kingdom, you could think. However, the decision of the UK to leave the European Union following the 2016 referendum significantly changed Ireland's stance vis-a-vis the EU and towards the project of European integration. And as a result of Brexit, Ireland eventually came to embrace a much more pro-European position. In fact, all the statistics that we have seen since 2016, including regular polls conducted by the European Parliament, have confirmed that Ireland today is one of the most pro-European member states of the EU. And clearly Brexit explains that a significant transformation because in the context of the withdrawal negotiation, Ireland found the EU to be a safe haven and the framework that better protected its interest in the context of the withdrawal.
Okay, now that's a great setup for the next question, which is basically about Brexit. Now, of course, Brexit, the referendum happened in 2016, but the first inklings of it came, I guess, in 2013 with David Cameron's Bloomberg speech. So tell us about how Ireland prepared itself for a possible no vote, both before the referendum happened, and also what was Ireland's immediate reaction after the referendum when it turned out that the British had voted to leave.
In many ways, I think Ireland prepared for a Brexit scenario way better than the United Kingdom itself. When British Prime Minister David Cameron called for a possible referendum already in 2013, the United Kingdom really didn't do any preparatory work for all the scenarios that might result out of that referendum, and didn't think through the implication that a Brexit vote would have, especially for Northern Ireland and its relationship with the other state in the island of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. On the contrary, the Irish government immediately saw the risk that Brexit would have for peaceful coexistence in the island of Ireland, and the implications for trade and north-south, east-west relationship of that possible vote. In fact, immediately after the Brexit vote, Ireland also quickly came up with its priorities in the Brexit negotiation. And I think in a very clever and strategic move, made sure that its priorities would become the EU priorities. There is a key document that the Irish government produced in March 2017, exactly at the time when Britain notified its intention to withdraw from the European Union. And in this policy document, the Irish government largely anticipated what would become then the priorities of the European Council a few weeks afterwards. Among those priorities, of course, Ireland immediately identified the importance of avoiding the return of a hard border in the island of Ireland, which was essential to maintain the peace process following the Good Friday Agreement. And as we know, that objective largely shaped the withdrawal negotiation and also the negotiations and the framework of future EU-UK relationship. I think in retrospect, that was a masterpiece by the Irish government. Because I think from a British perspective, the thought was that Ireland could be negotiated on a one-to-one basis. And if that had happened, I think it would have been so much harder for Ireland to actually impose its priorities. But by making Irish priorities the EU priorities, the Irish government was actually able to leverage the weight, the size, and the power of the whole Union in its negotiations with the United Kingdom.
If I could ask a quick follow-up about Brexit, the thing about the negotiations was that Ireland was obviously a really important factor in the negotiations, especially the question about the Irish border. It also threatened to break the negotiations at various points. And to actually wreck the whole Brexit process, and that was the case before Brexit actually happened. But even after Brexit happened, the UK government under Boris Johnson made several threats to actually go back and basically tear up the original agreement. And the main sticking point was Ireland. Now, I guess my question is, did Ireland ever question whether the EU would stick by its side, or were they worried that there would eventually be a tap on the shoulder at a European Council meeting saying, you know, can't you guys give way a little bit on this issue?
I think Ireland had that concern that the European Union would throw it under the bus at some point, but that never happened. And I think this is the main explanation, as I said at the beginning, why pro-EU sentiments have increased so much in Ireland over the last few years, because the Irish people really realized the level of solidarity, of support, the strength that comes from being part of or a European Union. Now, why did that happen? I think the main explanation is that the EU quickly realized that when negotiating with a withdrawing member state, it could not sell off parts of the acquis. It could not give up to some of the core values and principles that underpin the project of European integration to appease a country that had decided to leave the European Union. So in fact, the United Kingdom, by deciding to leave, lost all the leverage it had up until that point, and which had allowed it in the last 20 years to gain major concessions from its EU partners. But in the framework of a withdrawal negotiation, all the powers ultimately were on the EU side, and that helped to protect the Irish interest.
That's very interesting. So now let's turn to kind of more general issues about European economic governance after the crisis and Ireland's role within that. And I'm thinking especially of Ireland's role within the Eurogroup. It's actually, that also has been an important evolution, I think, of Ireland's position. Do you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Of course. Ireland decided to join Economic and Monetary Union and the euro as a single currency since its inception. And that was historically a major step forward for the Republic of Ireland, because it also severed its monetary ties with the United Kingdom. So in many ways, participating to the euro was for Ireland historically an assertion of its sovereignty and autonomy and independence vis-a-vis the United Kingdom, which, as we all know, decided to opt out from the euro at the time of the Treaty of Maastricht in the 1990s. However, of course, being part of the euro included costs for Ireland, especially when the financial crisis, what we call as the euro crisis, hit starting in 2008, 2009. Ireland suffered out of it, not so much because of problems in public finances, which were quite under control in Ireland, but mostly because of high levels of private debt, which resulted in a banking crisis. Nevertheless, Ireland was helped by EU partners through a bailout organized via the IMF and the European Financial Assistance instruments. And that helped the country actually regain competitiveness and quickly return on the financial markets through a dynamic economy. And of course, major support coming from technological investment in the state. And the outcome of this complicated and painful process was that in many ways, Ireland consolidated its role as a key partner within the Eurozone. And I think there are several evidence of the growing importance that Ireland has in the functioning of Europe's economic and monetary union. First of all, the president of the Eurogroup is an Irishman, Mr. Pascal Donohoe, until recently the Minister for Finance of Ireland, who in fact has kept his position despite no longer being the Minister of Finance in the national government. And then Ireland has also highly important position in the European Central Bank. The chief economist of the ECB Executive Board is also an Irishman, which reveals the influence that the country plays within the Eurozone and the governance of economic and monetary union.
All right, that's really interesting. So I guess I also wanted to ask you about some of the positions that the Irish government takes that are slightly outside the European Union mainstream. Despite the fact that Ireland likes to think of itself as a very pro-EU country, there are some ways where it is outside the mainstream. I'm thinking of the fact that it's not in Schengen. It maintains neutrality, which is not necessarily a problem from the point of view of the European Union, but it's become an issue, especially as the war in Ukraine has dragged on. And especially also its position on tax reforms. With some of these issues have become a little bit more perhaps difficult for Ireland after Brexit, because it no longer have the United Kingdom as a very large ally in negotiations with the other European Union partners.
Thanks, Ian, for those questions. I started off the interview by saying that Ireland has moved from being a laggard into one of the core members of the EU, but it is absolutely right, as you point out, to notice that there are some elements of specialty that Ireland maintains within the European Union. And there's, I think, particularly three of them, the one you raised. First of all, Ireland is not part of Schengen, the free movement zone that involves most members of the EU plus some non-EU members like Switzerland and Norway. The reason for This has to do with its special connection to the United Kingdom and the existence of a separate Schengen zone, let's call it like that, the Common Travel Area, the CTA, that obviously predates the creation of the European Union, goes back to the time of Ireland's membership into Commonwealth and Empire, and which has allowed people to move freely between Ireland and Great Britain without hindrances. Now, for the Irish government, maintaining the functioning of the common travel area has been a priority also in the Brexit negotiation, and that goal was secured in the Brexit agreement. So still today, it is possible for individuals, for Irish citizens, to move freely to Great Britain and vice versa. And of course, the consequence of that has been that Ireland has not been able to join the EU free movement zone, the Schengen area. So border controls are still in place for Irish citizens traveling to other EU member states and vice versa. My sense is that this arrangement is probably unlikely to change precisely because of the unique special geographical circumstances of Ireland being an island, but closely connected to the UK also through Northern Ireland. The second area of speciality of Ireland is connected to common foreign security and defense policy. Now, in this respect, Ireland, again, is not actually the sole member state that enjoys a special status or opt-outs from common arrangements. Currently, there are four other member states of the European Union which embrace a principle of neutrality in their constitutions. The other, besides Ireland, are Austria, Malta, and Cyprus. But of course, the position of Ireland in this respect has changed as a consequence of the war in Ukraine. Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine, which started on a large scale in February 2022, has produced a earthquake in European foreign affairs and defense policy, most visible in the decision by Finland and Sweden, two other member states that traditionally embrace a principle of neutrality, to join NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Finland became a member of NATO in 2023, and Sweden is currently on at the waiting door and will become a member as soon as the Turkish and Hungarian parliament ratify their accession. Now, Finland's and Sweden joining NATO impact on the relationship between the EU and NATO, because clearly now membership is almost entirely overlapping. And in any case, regardless of EU-NATO relationship, the war in Ukraine has pushed the European Union to do more in the field of common foreign and security policy, which does create some additional challenges for Ireland. So far, Ireland has agreed to become part of PESCO, the Permanent Structural Cooperation in Defense, which is coordinated at EU level. But because of its neutrality principle, the triple lock, and domestic opposition to greater involvement in military affairs, the Irish state has, of course, maintained a very detached and marginal role in these developments. And I think it will be interesting to see what happens in the next decades. And as we look forward, let me just quickly mention the third area where I think Ireland still has a special and in many ways awkward role, which is that of taxation. Clearly, Ireland has historically benefited of a very low corporate tax rate, the lowest in the European Union at 12.5%. That has allowed the Irish state to attract foreign direct investments, including in technology, pharmaceuticals, from companies based in the United States. Ireland has recently agreed to increase its minimum tax as part of a global minimum tax agreement steered by the G20 and OECD, which will raise the global minimum tax to at least 15%. However, the developments at fiscal and financial level in the European Union, especially the creation of the Next Generation EU Recovery Fund in response to the pandemic, will undoubtedly require the European Union to raise more resources to repay the debt and common debt and interest connected to Next Generation EU. And that, therefore, raises the big question of taxation in the future of Europe. And my sense is that Ireland will not be an easy partner to deal with on this controversial topic, but time will tell.
Right. Okay. I also wanted to ask, I have, and before I have one more final question, I also wanted to ask about social issues. If you go back to the Nice referendum and the Lisbon referendum, the No campaign would often say that, well, if you vote for this, then Ireland will be forced to have gay marriage and abortion, even though there's nothing to do with those things in those treaties. But then the issues did kind of come up, and I'm wondering what the role of the European Union was in kind of shifting attitudes and political culture on those issues in the last few years.
I think the impact of EU membership on Ireland's social legal norms has been transformative over the last 2 decades. We should remember that when Ireland joined in the 1970s, it was in many ways one of the most conservative, backward, deeply Catholic countries of the European Union. And in less than 50 years, Ireland has tremendously transformed. Some evidence of this are examples such as the fact that when Ireland became a member of the European Union, it still had legislation which compelled women who got married to resign from work. The Eighth Amendment of the Irish Constitution prohibited abortion in basically all circumstances. And of course, divorce was not possible, legally recognized. Now, in the last 2 decades, that has tremendously changed. We know that in the 1990s, divorce was legalized, but more importantly, in 2015, a referendum recognized marriage equality. In 2018, a referendum constitutionalized the right to abortion. And the same year, also a referendum decriminalized blasphemy in the Irish states. Now, none of that would have been possible without the influence of the membership of the European Union, with important rulings delivered both by the European Court of Justice as well as by the European Court of Human Rights that step by step put under pressure and ultimately made unsustainable the Irish position on matters like divorce or abortion. And in this respect, there might be a major influence from the European Union, which is really that on social legal norms, cultural attitudes, and more generally, cultural transformation in the position of the states where participation to a project of integration, exchange of thoughts, possibility to travel out of states to get treatments which were not legally possible within the state, ultimately rendered the traditional conservative backward position of Ireland unsustainable. So this might have been, in the end, one of the most significant gains of Ireland's membership in the EU over the years.
That's very interesting. Now, that brings me to, I guess, my final question. I was going to ask whether or not you think that Ireland will still be a member of the European Union in another 50 years, and whether there will still be a European Union in another 50 years. But without using that much of a time horizon, what do you think the future holds for Ireland's membership in the European Union, let's say over the next few years?
Well, a famous Irish poet, Oscar Wilde, once said, it's very hard to make prediction, particularly if they concern the future. So with that in mind, I think it's difficult for me to answer this prospective question. Yet it seems to me that the future of Europe is so much dependent from broader geopolitical and geostrategic factor, including now the war in Ukraine, the prospect of eastward enlargement and accession of Eastern European states, as well as states from the Western Balkans. And all that might ultimately lead also to significant transformation in the EU constitutional outlook. Nevertheless, it seems to me clear that in a world where power rivalries is on the rise, the future of European states is increasingly in the union is increasingly in working together on the assumption that union makes strengths, and there is very little that each of them separately can do. In fact, a small country like Ireland, with a population of just over 5 million people, can punch above its weight because it is part of the European Union. And it is through the European Union that it can achieve much more of its goal and objectives and policy priorities than it would be able to do on its own. And there again, the example of Brexit proves it. And I think this is one of the greatest lessons of the last decade in our Decades project.
All right. Well, that's a great place to end. The only thing left for me to do is to thank you for your time, Professor Federico Fabbrini.
And thank you very much, Dr. Ian Cooper.
Have a good day.
You've been listening to Decades, made with the support of the Irish Department of Foreign Affairs Communicating Europe Initiative, although the views of the guests are entirely their own. The Post-Brexit Europe podcast is a product of the DCU Brexit Institute. The host is Ian Cooper. The producer is Lucrezia Rossi. Music by Doug Romano. Thank you for listening.